Hey everyone, this is Noor, and you're listening to the Radical Contemporary Podcast. We're dedicating this month to some of the most influential athletes in the region, talking to us about their fitness journey, cultivating an active lifestyle, and what keeps them motivated. This episode is powered by Nike. And now I'll leave you with my co-host, Yasmin Inewi.
Hey everyone, this is Yasmin, and in this episode, I speak to one of Egypt's biggest fitness coaches and BeFit founder, Ali Mazhar. At a young age, Ali found himself immersed in the world of sports with a passion of becoming a football star. Years later, he founded BeFit. It started off with him training a small group of friends, which has quickly turned into an empire and a huge training facility. There are several locations across Egypt and has recently just opened up in Dubai. With BeFit growing exponentially, Ali managed to land an ambassadorship with Nike, which has paved the way for more opportunities. Ali and I speak about the importance of leading a healthy lifestyle, placing realistic fitness goals, starting your own fitness career, finding the right workout gear, not relying solely on the scale, and finally searching for that inner fire we all call ambition. All right, on to my conversation with Ali. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Yasmin. Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine.
Before we get into how you started your BeFit empire, I sort of wanted for you to tell us a little bit about how you got into sports and how you started your journey. I know that you were a football player. Can you elaborate more on this subject?
First of all, I started off as an enthusiast, play football. I didn't plan on being a professional at any point in time when I was young. But then when I was 11 years old, I was playing a friendly match. So I was in just a local small club. We played against Al Ahli, and I don't remember, of course, but apparently they approached my father and they told him that they think I could be something. So my father empowered me and helped me to take that route. So converted quite fast into more than a serious football enthusiast. And I started playing semi-pro at a very young age, at 13 or 14 years old in Ahli. And then I joined the Egyptian national team under 14 and under 17 years old. So things started building up really quickly. It was very hard to manage my time with school and everything. So I got into like a tough phase of my life. I was in the AUC, the American University in Cairo, when I was 16 years old, so pretty young. And at the same time, I was still hoping to continue my football career. And this was kind of a crossroads. So I was lucky enough, I got a full scholarship to Rutgers University. It's the State University of New Jersey. And I flew out 2006 to the States. I played varsity soccer on a full scholarship for Rutgers for 3.5 years. And I graduated with my bachelor's in finance. Came back to Egypt, signed pro in 2010 and started my professional career. But then with the revolution and everything that happened in Egypt in 2011, and football was kind of taking a very tough route and the league was stopped and all of that, it was very demotivating. And then a year and a half after, I kept trying, but I got into a major car accident, which had me not playing sports for another year and a half. So I had basically wasted 3 years of my career. So I consciously thought, okay, this is the end. So I should do something different. I started investment banking for a year and a half, but then soon after I quit and I started BeFit, and
and that's how it started.
That's how it started.
How long did you stay in investment? And do you feel like this helped you build BeFit?
I'm very lucky because my education helped me along the way. I honestly did not plan it. It was God's plan. So I'm very lucky for that. But definitely having a finance background has helped me a lot with my business decisions today, and also helped me a lot throughout my career. Just having this kind of analytical skills and skill set to run your own business, to manage your funding, to manage your finances, to run your company. This is all the kind of stuff that I would have needed to hire a lot of people to help me with. And at a startup phase, for the first maybe 3, 4, 5 years, you don't afford these type of calibers, you know? Yeah, I was lucky.
Yeah, that's crazy. So how come you decided when you came to open BFIT, you kind of concentrated more on fitness and like CrossFit style workouts rather than doing like a football academy? How come you didn't take like the football route, masalan?
Honestly, I was working in the bank while I was learning a lot about rehab and a lot about the physical side of things. I wanted to understand more about the body. I want to understand more about how I can help myself get back in shape. So I started reading and studying a lot. And then I started coaching my friends on the side, like a hobby, you know?
Yeah.
And it built up really fast. So it was nothing planned.
Why did you start BFIT and what was your goal then?
When I started reading and understanding a lot about the human body and what it's capable of doing, I also felt that we are lacking a lot in the fitness market, you know? I felt like we could only know what the personal trainers know at the gyms, and that's about it. And I felt there's a huge gap between what I was experiencing in the US versus what's happening here in the Egyptian market. So I thought, if we can really build up the knowledge of the trainers, if we can really take this to a different level, the whole market could develop. I'm not claiming to be the guy who pushed the market forward, so it's not taken in the wrong direction. I just feel after CrossFit and BFIT and all the new fitness entities, it pressured everyone in the industry to step their game up.
And the fact is, I used to come train when you first started BFIT, actually, because it was very similar to a lot of the bootcamp style workouts that I used to do in the US. It was the only one that was pretty much right next to my house, what seemed really interesting. I would come a lot. And I remember back then, it wasn't as popular. Like the whole fitness scene in Egypt was still on the rise. But to be honest, you were one of the first that drove this trend, Saraha. I really do think, we were really lacking a good fitness, not gym, but pretty much what you've created, like bootcamp styles, and then you sort of went into the gyms, and then you built a whole community.
Apart from the facilities, yeah. I think it's about the training methodology or the philosophy. BFIT was never about the facility. It was never the most expensive facility. It was never the nicest place. It was never the fanciest. Mm-hmm. People came because they believed in what we're doing. Yeah. As cliche as it sounds, they believe that there's someone there that cares about them, that understands their needs and is delivering a service that is helping them reach what they're there for. You know, it's very important for the fitness providers in general or the coaches to understand what their skill set is and to understand their target market. So if you're not coaching professional athletes, you need to consider the philosophy of the people and the psychology of people that are coming to you. If you're coaching professional athletes, it's a totally different ballgame. They're already motivated. This is their bread and butter. They need to make money every single year because they're playing this kind of sport. Yeah. If it's someone who's coming to lose a couple of kilos and to regain some range of motions in their joints and to get rid of their lower back pain, you don't need to hammer them and scream in their faces and tell them to get some sort of a set with a certain set of weight or to do this or to do that. They're just there to move well and feel good. So I think a very big part of the loophole or a very big part of the issues that occur because we as fitness professionals don't understand why the client is coming. Why are they there? Why are they hiring you as a trainer? Why are they joining this bootcamp or group exercise service? If you answer this question first, you will be able to tailor the program and even tailor your attitude and the way you approach the service in a way that caters to what they're looking for. And if that happens, they're yours. If you are just some kind of guy that's coaching or that's doing it as any regular job with no passion or enthusiasm whatsoever, how are the people supposed to get their energy from you?
It's all about the trainers at the end of the day. And that's what I've come to realize whenever I go train. I always want people to be focused on my needs and what I want to do and what I want to basically change within my lifestyle, maybe even become more healthier, whether it's through losing weight, becoming fitter, etc. So did you think that this was, when you first started BFIT, because it was something semi-new to everyone. Was this hard, bringing it to the market?
Yeah, definitely. We needed to educate people a lot, and it took a lot of time to raise the awareness and to get people to understand what we're doing. But I think also this gives you a big leverage in terms of offering something different, you know?
Yeah. And what about with trainers? You need to make sure that they're certified and they know what they're doing. How was it bringing on trainers for
our? It was tough to grow because we needed to create our own. Mm-hmm. And that requested people who still did not know anything about the business, did not believe in anything in the business, to mm-hmm. go and do some education to get their certifications, even though they didn't even know if this is going to be good for them or not. So in the early days, it was tough. But once we had 2-3 successful models, I think it started ramping up really well.
And is the onboard process for them the same as it is back then? Or is it slightly different now? Do you have...
No, now it's totally different. We have almost 85 trainers. So they have a full route starting from their interview process to their education requirements. We have our own educational diploma. So we have those trainers certified from AFPT, which is the biggest accreditation in Europe. It's a totally different experience now. So now we have
How long has BeFit been on the ground? It's been a while, right? Has it reached 10 years or not yet?
No. This is the sixth year.
Okay, we're all there yet.
We started in 2014. So
crazy.
It's been a while, but not 10 years yet.
By the way, can I tell you something super funny, actually? I actually met Saif in BeFit.
Oh, really?
So I have to credit you for that one.
I think we had a couple of those cases. This is not the first one. That's good to hear.
So over the past few years, obviously, BeFit has grown exponentially. And I'm very proud of what you've built. And I'm very proud of how you represent kind of the fitness industry in Egypt. It's something really nice for the region and hopefully globally can look up to, Yani. Especially that it literally came from the ground up. And I remember how it started. We were literally such a small group of people to now it's like a massive group and several locations. And you've even started opening in Dubai and you've really expanded. Do you feel like you've achieved majority of the goals that you've set for yourself, or do you feel like there's still more that you're planning on?
Goals are is a very wide approach. Goals are always a movable object. My goals 5 years ago were much more simple than my goals now. Mm-hmm. I think ambition in general is something that you can't really set barriers to. I think ambitious people will always be ambitious all the time and will always look for something different to do. I've achieved most of my goals that I planned in 2015 and surpassed a lot of them, but I'm definitely not done yet. And I have much bigger goals that I don't know if I can achieve or not. But every time you achieve something, you kind of think, okay, this was just a step leading to something else.
Yeah, I mean, one step at a time, right?
Yeah.
So you pretty much have a lot of locations now in Egypt. You kind of khalas established yourself fully in Egypt, and you just recently opened in Dubai, right? How do you feel about that, and why did you take that step? Do you want it to become a regional thing?
I think I wasn't planning on it. I had the right mix of people that I trust and care about to start with. But I think you kind of build your philosophy and you build your training and you build your business model that it can suit whatever country, whatever demographics. But at the end of the day, if you don't have the right mix of partners, local partners, trainers, the right gym to partner up with or the right platform to partner up with, you don't make the move, you know? So it's two things. You build up your model that it could work anywhere, but you don't really take the step unless you feel that this is the right time, these are the right people, and it makes sense for you at the moment.
Do you have other expansion plans other than Dubai?
We're always constantly expanding the business, but again, it depends on the moves, you know. We're just focusing on delivering the best quality we could, regardless of whether there are 15 venues or there are 5 venues. We go after delivering the service. Yeah. But I think in the future, do I want to see BeFit all over the world? Definitely.
Yeah.
Is not seeing BeFit all over the world a failure? No. It depends where the business steers. You know, it could be It could be, it could have more digital products. It could have more physical products. We could have a retail store one day. I just feel like we need to focus on what we're doing today, deliver the best quality. And then when we get some opportunities, we assess the risks, we assess the opportunity and move forward.
Yeah. And you mentioned how you started looking for partners and stuff. When did you realize that, okay, now is the time where I do need to have partners. I need to make my business stronger so that I can expand more.
I feel it's not really a matter of I need partners. It's more of a matter of, is this opportunity big enough? Yeah, it's big. Could you do it alone? If that answer is no, who are the right people to have on board? And you take it from there. Like, you don't decide that you want partners to make the business stronger. Yeah. You feel like some opportunities would be better off with a partner.
Okay, so touching back on how you basically BeFit started as a bootcamp style fitness experience, and now you've added much more to that, like the gym, for example, and I think you tapped into other sports as well. Like in the gym, you offer certain classes. You kind of built this, you know, like community, like I said, and there's an app, there's a restaurant, there's like a bunch of different stuff related to BeFit now. Was this always your goal, or it just suddenly like happened like that, like living the healthy lifestyle under the BeFit umbrella?
I think we needed the expansion because we needed to provide people with more versatile, more dynamic kind of services. Mm-hmm. And like I told you in the beginning, it's always the services that drive us. We want people to have the best experience. We want people to have the best service. So if that means in the winter, they can't train because it's too cold, it means that we need to have an indoor arena. If it means that the elderly cannot come to the group classes because they need personal trainers, that means we need to have a personal training service. If it means the people who've been doing BeFit and they travel are trying to train with us remotely, then it means we need to have live sessions through Zoom, you know? So again, the business need is what provides the decision to expand our infrastructure, not the opposite. We don't decide to do a business or a gym or a live fitness or a nutrition program and then look for clients who need it. It's the opposite.
So, you know how there's a lot of focus on strength-based routines in BeFit, especially when it's the bootcamp style. There's a lot of misconceptions with weightlifting, in particular with women. Personally, I love weightlifting. Saraha, this is how I release my stress. I love doing it after work. I enjoy it, yani. But there's a huge misconception where I'm going to gain weight because I'm weightlifting, or I'm going to become too bulky. But I feel like this isn't really the case, right? It's such a huge stereotype.
I think people misunderstand the concept of strength training or weightlifting, especially for women. I think people look on social media and see all those bulky women and they feel like if they carry dumbbells or barbells tomorrow, they will be this bulky. Yeah. I think what they don't understand is these women put in years and years and years of effort to look that way for a certain sport or for a certain reason. General public or a regular girl or a regular woman that goes to work or has kids or is a housewife, when she does strength training, she will never ever look like that because it takes years, years, years of building up those muscles. Yeah. So I definitely love strength training, even for women. I think for aesthetics reason, for performance reason, for functionality, it's great. Your body tones up, you build up a lot of muscle mass that helps you stay fit, stay healthy, helps you move well, helps alleviate a lot of the pain around your joints, supports your lower back, supports your knees, supports your hips. Yeah. I love strength training. I think people who only do cardio or only do cardio classes and run are missing out on a lot of benefits.
After I graduated, I sort of changed my lifestyle, yani, and I started strength training more. And even though I weighed more while I was strength training, this was last year. This year I lost even more weight and more body fat, ammatan, but I feel as good as I was when I was strength training. You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
yes.
My weight on the scale went down drastically, but my body feels different. I don't think it looks as good as when I was strength training. Not about the scale, it's more about other things, like, for example, getting your body fat calculated, getting your muscle mass calculated, because the scale is very irrelevant. And I could be 56 kilos and looking fitter than how I am right now, and I weigh 52 kilos.
100%.
I just want you to give some advice to a lot of these people who rely on the scale more than they rely on their own goals.
Yes, I think, again, people just look at the number, but now with a lot of articles and educational material, people will start understanding that it's not how much they weigh, it's mm-hmm. what they weigh. It's what the weight they're carrying is. Yeah. So I think people need to understand that if you don't weigh 100 kilos or if you weigh 100 kilos, it doesn't matter depending on what you're weighing. So if you weigh 100 kilos and you have 25% body fat, you will look chubby. But if you weigh 100 kilos and you're a super fit guy that have 10% body fat, you would look amazing. So at the end of the day, you need to lose weight by managing your diet, managing your calorie intake and eating the right diet for you. And you need to manage your muscle mass by strength training. It's as simple as that. You need to train your muscles and you need to build up your muscles to support your skeletal system and to help you stay in shape, because that's what muscles do.
Important is nutrition in your fitness goals, because you know some people will be like, oh, I went to exercise but I don't see the difference, and I'm like, no, it's what you're eating that counts also. Like I actually really do believe that 75% of it is your diet.
Of course, I think nutrition is more important than training when it comes to your shape.
Yeah,
I think if you do whatever you can when it comes to training, but you're not eating well, you're not eating the right kind of food for you, you're kind of wasting your effort. If you're planning on looking better, if your goal is aesthetics, you need to focus on your food. Even if you cut back a bit on your training, your food will make a lot of difference. If you are training for performance, then it's different, because you can afford to eat a lot more calories because you're focusing on your energy and your strength and your recovery. But if you're focusing on losing body fat, then nutrition will be really 70-75% of the game.
And also, how important is it to actually have a rest day or a recovery day?
This is pretty vague, because it depends on what you're doing, how heavy are you training, what's your training load, how many hours, what's the intensity, what kind of training you're doing, and so forth. But generally, I always tell people to go by feel. Like you will start understanding your body. If you don't feel like you want to be at the gym or you want to go train, if you don't feel committed and motivated, if you don't have that kind of urge to train, then it's a sign that your body needs some recovery. It's good to balance things out and to really find the right routine for you and the right components between nutrition. Even when it comes to food, you know, like if you don't feel like fully dieting this week and you're not motivated, then let loose a bit, because you need to look at the bigger picture. I don't want you dieting heavily, crazy for 2 weeks and then snapping out of it and eating everything that you see for the following week or two. You know, everything is about balance. Everything is about looking at the bigger picture and really doing something that you can sustain.
Yeah, I agree. Tell us also a little bit about your transformation challenge, because this is where people can actually go in and see how the BeFit experience actually is like.
My favorite part about them is people basically changing their habits. It's really taking someone from not being educated about fitness and health and his body and his nutrition and really educating them. You get them hooked because they're still very motivated. They're still starting their fitness journey. So they kind of feel the results right away. Once they fix anything, they feel a lot of change. And I think this is big, because if you're feeling a lot of changes quite fast, especially in the beginning of your journey, you're very motivated to keep going. If you're putting in a lot of effort as a beginner and you're not seeing much happening, you're very prone to be demotivated and to go back to where you started. So I think the good thing about the transformation programs is changing the habits, the educational part, and definitely getting those results in fast, which helps people just get them hooked. And then after that, they know that they need to change a lot when it comes to their body, you know?
I actually did something very similar in the US. That's how I lost a lot of weight and I became more educated on my goals in general for my own health and body. And I really realized, first of all, there are so many things that I cut out of my diet that I do not eat anymore because obviously I have a bad reaction to it. And then I realized how to make my body feel better, whether it's through exercise, whether it's for nutrition. I know the proper foods to eat. Like, I feel like these challenges kind of, it changes your mentality. Going forward, you just become healthier in general. It changes your entire lifestyle. It's very educational.
There's really a big educational component to it. And I feel this is what makes people kind of hooked. And it makes them feel like, okay, I'm doing well. I gained something significant in the short term. So let me focus on that. Let me not waste all my effort.
What is the factor that leads to people giving up? Is it the fact that they don't see results too fast? Because obviously, it's going to take time. Or is it the fact that they feel like they can't do it? And is this something that happens a lot during the transformation challenge? Well, how do you help this person cope with something like this?
Just feel maybe sometimes or a lot of times people go in with the wrong expectations. Mm-hmm. I feel people go in with some unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
I think if you have the right person to educate you about where you should go, what you should reach and all of that, mm-hmm. then things become quite, let's say, realistic then. If you're going in with unrealistic expectations, mm-hmm. there's really a big possibility for you to be disappointed, you know? So I just think if people just understand that I'm doing this for this reason and I'm going to get this out of it, then the whole kind of ball game changes. If you go in thinking that, okay, this is a quick in and out, I'm going to get this and this out of this, it's a bit unrealistic and it's a recipe for disappointment because it's not really possible that you get good outcome out of a very short period of time. You need to just manage your expectations.
Yeah, I agree. So jumping into social media, you've kind of become a fitness king on Instagram. How do you feel social media plays a role in the fitness scene right now? Because it wasn't like how it was 6 years ago when you started.
No, it wasn't. It was never a tool for my business, to be honest. So that's why I'm telling you it's a very tricky question. I started BeFit before I had an Instagram. It was never a tool to grow my business. I never even thought about how big social media can go. And never, ever, ever really a goal for me to grow my presence on social media. I never thought about myself as a fitness influencer. I never tried to make any money off of short-term posts or deals with brands or commercial stuff like that, because I really believed in my business and I didn't want to position myself as an influencer. Not that this is something that's demeaning or anything, but I wanted to focus on the bigger picture. I wanted to focus on growing my business. I didn't want to promote products that I didn't believe in. So all the brands that I signed with, as a long-term brand ambassador, such as Nike. This has been my fifth year with Nike, and I have a lot of other brands that I work with, but they're usually annual contracts or more. I don't get paid per post or something like that. And ironically, I use social media a lot because obviously now it's a cornerstone of my business. It's a cornerstone of my communication to my clients, to people that follow me, to all of that. But I try as much as I can to really, really put a lot of effort into not making social media bigger than that in my life. I don't want it to ever be controlling me. I don't check my Instagram every hour or every 2 hours. I barely use Facebook. I tie it to my Instagram account and that's about it. I just feel there's also a lot of negative/unrealistic expectations that people have on social media. It makes them really demotivated. And I think people see us, I would say, or see a lot of the younger guys that are kind of perceived as successful and And people feel like, oh, if I'm not him, then my life is horrible. I think a lot of it is just based on unrealistic expectations. At the end of the day, we're normal people. We show the glamorous part of our lives or the successful part of our lives, not because we're fake, but because there's no point of sharing negativity. But if people think that this is all that there is, without the struggles, without the failures, without the rough moments, without the days where we feel that we were disappointed and we have a lot of issues to handle, then people are getting the wrong side of it. I feel it's a good communication tool, and it has a lot of benefits when it comes to exposure, and I've benefited personally and professionally from it a lot. But I can very comfortably say that it really does not control my life. I got off Instagram and Facebook for 2 months last year, and I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel like I want to open my phone and check my feed. I post pictures and I never check who liked them and who didn't. I mute any stories that I feel that could be, for me, a source of negativity or something that gets my mind off of the track that I want to focus on, because we're consuming a lot of information daily. And if we really don't put a limit and we don't create a filter, we can get really lost. You can subconsciously start chasing goals that mean nothing for you just because a lot of people are doing them. You can really think that you want to go with your life a certain way just because someone is doing that. I just truly feel that people need to be very aware of the information that they're consuming, and they need to be really aware of the impact of such information on them personally in their lives, because subconsciously they can really go to a dark place without even knowing why they feel the way they feel.
And even though social media and internet can be very educational, at the same time, it can be very misunderstood. You know, like you can look up something or look at someone's fitness journey and be inspired, but then realize, oh, I might not get to that. But also you're on a completely different path, so you shouldn't be comparing. It can definitely be confusing, I think. So.
I 100% agree.
But do you think with social media presence, this helps? Like you said, you're a Nike ambassador. I really don't think, this, other than the social media presence, I think Nike is very picky with who they work with. And I think that they did want to represent someone who built such a huge empire. But do you think that this helped you reach such huge brands like Nike?
Definitely. 100%. I think it's a communication tool. We cannot say that it's not an important tool for anyone's career, whether it's a celebrity, a singer, whatever, football player, anyone. I just think, we just need to control the use of it and to really try to filter the content that we see. I love all my work with Nike. It's one of the brands that I was super happy to work with because I've always been a Nike user. And this was perfect for me, because if I wasn't sponsored by Nike today, I would still wear all Nike, to be honest. And people have known me for years. They know that. So I was very happy to work with them.
And has this helped you with certain opportunities?
It has, with a lot of exposure internationally. I was very happy to go to the Nike European HQ last year and do a workshop there and train the employees and get to understand a lot about the research department and marketing and all of that. And I think it strengthens my name in general and my profile.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's one of the top brands in sports. So I'm honestly such a huge Nike fan too. Also, this is actually a really interesting question, I think, and I would like your take on it. But how important is it while working out to have the proper gear? For example, shoes.
Enormously important. Enormously important. I think people underestimate that. Yeah. But the more you get into sports and the more technology advances, it can protect you from a lot of injuries when you have the right gear. It can give you, apart from the comfort, of course, and the design and all of that, but I mean functionality-wise, if you run long distance with a training shoe and run long distance with a running shoe, you will really understand the difference. If you do Olympic weightlifting and you're going heavy and you need to hit the right positions on your squat or your overhead positions, you will really need the right gear. And and again, the most important one for me is to protect you from injuries, because if I train it at such a high level, I don't want to get injured because this is just going to be equal to not training at all. So safety-wise is crucial.
So I wanted to touch upon, you know, what happened during lockdown, how, you know, gyms weren't functioning and obviously you guys were closed and all this. Did this shed a new light on a different way of training for you?
Definitely. I think for a lot of us. Well, apart from shedding light on a different way of training, it, I think, made us all reflect on how thankful we are, first of all, to what we had.
Yes.
And we're very thankful to be with people we love, we enjoy, to really feel that we have the right support system around us. So I think this is the most important thing that I experience, and I feel like people around me experience, that we're very thankful to what we're going through. We're very thankful to, we're very blessed to understand the importance of what we had, you know. And this was a really big thing for all of us. Definitely people experience a different way of training, and I think it will last because they understand now how easy it is for them to train on the go, how they can really feel like, okay, that's very good. I can really train when I'm away. I can open my laptop and do this workout. I can use YouTube. I can jump on a Zoom session. I can do this. I can do that. There isn't a lot of excuses now for people who are not training regularly, wherever they are. But I feel the biggest one was all of us feeling blessed for what we had.
And as a business point of view, do you feel like this is something you might want to add to your business now, like masalan adding online workouts to an app or...
We already have customized online training programs that we've been delivering for 3 years now. So it's not something new.
No, it's not.
But we have now live group training sessions. We have a full schedule of live sessions every day.
This is part of your membership, basically.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's great. Okay, so two last things I want to talk about. And basically, one of them is marathons have become extremely popular in Egypt. And I'm really excited about that because in the US, I used to participate in whichever I could. What's the best way to prepare for that?
Okay, short term and long term. If you already have the running capacity, then you need to just keep going on a running program that builds up to a marathon, depending on the distance, and to maintain your strength level. If it's a long term and you don't have the running capacity, you definitely need a running program or a running coach that guides you throughout the time. If someone is a beginner, at least will take a year and a half or 2 years to prepare for a marathon. So it's a long term process. So they must be physically and mentally committed to that. Mm-hmm. And runners in general, long distance, they need to be okay with solitude. They need to be okay with being alone in general. So I think a big personality component will come into play when you're really thinking if you should run a marathon or not. You will not have 20 people in your circle preparing for the marathon with you. You're lucky to have 2, 3, 4 people. So I think the first question should be, am I ready to take on that challenge mentally? And if so, then you start your physical preparation.
And like we said, gear is very important. So is there a specific Nike shoe, masalan, that you would recommend?
I think for the running in general, definitely you need to see and experience different shoes for your soul, because it makes a very big difference. I used to be very comfortable in the Nike Freeze, for example. And then when I tried the Vomeros and the Pegasus, I was much more comfortable. So I think you need to try things out. Some people feel the lighter shoes are better for them. I like the ones that give more stability. It depends on how the shape of your foot. So I think the best thing is to try different shoes until you settle on one. And you have a lot of time to train for a marathon. So definitely you will try different shoes.
Okay, amazing. The fitness scene has become a lot more popular and there's a lot of people opening up their own thing. But what is the biggest advice you could share with them?
Oof, that's a big one. I've been wanting to record the video about that for months, and I didn't get the time for it. But okay, for anyone that's looking to start his career in fitness, I don't want to split them up into coaching side and business side because they're completely different. But I will assume coaching side now, because a business side is a business side. You need to have the business tools, the funding, the right location, the right pricing to understand your target market. So there's a huge, huge, huge topic, and there are far more intelligent and better businessmen than me to go over that topic. But from the technical side, first of all, do not follow a business model that's already there. You cannot see BeFit or Gold's Gym or whatever name and think you can do that in a year. That's not possible. It could be possible miraculously if you have all what it takes, but this is a far-fetched goal for someone who's starting. And just like we spoke about the athlete, we speak about the coach, this will just make you disappointed if you start in a wrong path. So I feel people need to understand their set of skills, their capabilities, and what they're passionate about. That's the most important thing. If you love group training, if you're going to coach groups for the next 10 years and you won't be bored, then go for that. If you hear that personal trainers make more money, do not go do personal training, because you will not last. You will get bored. You will flatline and you won't reach anything, and you will just waste your time and your effort. I think a lot of people don't understand the importance of really taking the time to understand why you're doing this. Why am I being a coach? What do I like about the job? Is it the personal part? Is it the group part? Is it the community part? Is it the educational part? So you can go into sports-specific training and be the best at it. If you don't really use the set of skills that you have, if you don't really focus on how you can be different, what is going to make you a better coach than everyone around you, you will go nowhere. Because like you said, there's so many providers. There will only be more coaches as time comes. Yes, the market is big. But if you want to stand out, if you want to, regardless of how people perceive you, just for you on a personal level, feel that you are successful, that you have created something that's different, that you're a better coach, then you need to really take on a route that you are passionate about. That's something that you would love to educate yourself, get more knowledge, develop your service, get better. As simple as that.
Okay, amazing. I'm ready to start my gym. Last question. Who inspires you the most, and did you have a mentor throughout your journey?
I had a lot of mentors on a spiritual level, on an emotional level, on a mental level, on a sports level. So I can at least count 5 to 7 people that really made a huge difference for me in my life on different aspects of my personality. Inspirational is different people in different fields, to be honest. A lot of founders and businessmen stories inspired me, but a lot of athletes also inspired me. I love Kobe Bryant. I love LeBron James. I love every athlete I like something specific about. So I like work ethic. I like dedication. I like loyalty. Yeah, a lot. I love Muhammad Salah.
Don't you? But,
so I have definitely a lot of athletes that inspire me. I don't have, honestly, a single role model where I can say this is the guy that I want to be like. I just feel like I try to get the best out of everyone's personality.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I'm sure a lot of people find you inspiring. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, give us a review, shoot me a text, or direct message us on Instagram at Radical Contemporary, where we'd love to hear your feedback and the topics you'd like to listen to. Also, you can check out our website, www.radicalcontemporary.com, where all of our content is available. Finally, we'll be hosting a new guest every week, so stay tuned.